Good afternoon, everybody. It's my honor to be in this year's APH annual meeting and to be able to present to you the story of the Thar Desert and the work that we do in the Thar Desert. It's quite a long way, actually, from here. It's about 10,000 miles, and 4 flights, so it's a long distance. And I represent an organization called Gravis, which works in this region. And we do primary health care, and we do secondary and tertiary levels as well. But today I will be focusing basically on primary level of health care. Going through the APHA formality, I do not have any financial relationships to disclose with regard to my project and presentation. So giving you a brief outline of what I am going to talk about, I will give you an idea about this geographical region of the world. I think for most of you it would be an unknown area, other than my co-presenter who apparently has spent some time, not in India, but in Pakistan, in the Thar Desert. And then I will talk about the main health issues that we face in this region. I think it will be important to introduce you to the organization that I represent called Gravis. And then I will talk about our health activities. I will also touch upon some of the major impacts that we have made and some of the future thinking. So the desert of Thar is in northwest India in a state called Rajasthan. It's basically spread in the state of Rajasthan, but then it further spreads into several other Indian states as well. And then towards the west, it goes into our neighboring country, Pakistan. 23 million people live in this small region, which makes it the most densely populated desert ecosystem in the world. I'm sorry, I missed out the word desert. So it's not the most populated area, but it's the most populated desert in the world. Much more dense than African and Australian deserts. So that high population density makes life difficult in the Thar Desert. We get about 25 centimeters of rain in a year, which is about, you know, good rainfall years, excellent years. Usually we get about 15 centimeters in a year. So that is considered to be quite dry. And then there are drought years in which the rainfall could reduce to something like zero. I was actually quite surprised today in a morning session when I was making a presentation, and somebody told me that San Diego gets the same kind of rain in a year, about 6 to 8 inches. But I guess US has the capacity of getting water from somewhere, even if it doesn't rain, and we don't have that capacity, so we have problems. Because of this limited rainfall and chronic droughts, the region is very, very poor. Most people in the rural area live on less than $2 a day, the international poverty definition. It's one of the most backward states of the country, and it has poor health and literacy indicators. The literacy rate in the state is well below 40%, which is well below the national average of 60%. And in terms of health indicators, I will probably talk later in the presentation. Healthcare facilities are scarcely available in the Thar Desert. It was interesting to know about the community health centers from the last presentation. We also have community health centers, but they're probably different from what you talked about. It's a government facility, which is located at the block level. Block is a larger administrative unit in which a number of villages are covered. But these centers are run by the government, and most of them do not function because of lack of doctors. So in the rural parts, healthcare facilities are scarce. Women and children are the most vulnerable, population groups. There are issues with regard to malnutrition. There are issues with regard to reproductive health and infectious diseases. Both communicable and non-communicable diseases are very, very common. In terms of communicable diseases, tuberculosis is of course, very, very common. We also have a high prevalence of acute respiratory infections and diarrhea. And in non-communicable diseases, there are diseases with regard to, cardiovascular system, degenerative diseases of bones and joints, and also diabetes. If you look at the mortality figures, they are much higher than the national average. The maternal mortality rate is about 550, and the national average is about 300, so it's much higher than that. The infant mortality also stands at 72, and the current figure for the country is about 57. So it's much, much higher than that. I already talked about the nutritional status, which is linked with the chronic droughts and the shortages of food and water in the area. So talking about Gravis, this is the map of the state of Rajasthan, and you can see Pakistan towards the west of Rajasthan. The organization was founded 25 years ago in 1983. It has 10 small offices in the desert to cover and control all the programs and activities. We also develop partnerships with local non-governmental organizations working in the region. So we have 9 partners right now, and we are working in 850 villages, which makes a population of 1 million people. 5 major objectives of our action. Primarily, we focus on self-reliant and sustainable programs. It is very, very important for us to develop projects which are not time-bound and which are not dependent on external funding only, although this is how we start working. But we focus on developing good community-based organizations and involving them in our programs so that the initiatives can sustain. Thar Desert, as I said, is a difficult region, but it has a lot of traditional knowledge with which people have survived for centuries, with very little rain, with water scarcity. So we respect that traditional wisdom, and we try to build it upon with modern science and technology. We focus on most vulnerable groups. India also has a very strong caste system, as you would know, and it's the lower castes in our system which are most vulnerable because they are the poorest and less educated. So we try to benefit them with our programs. And we do networking and linkages to integrate our work with other organizations. Now, coming specifically to our health program, Gravis was founded in 1983, but we started our health activities in 1990. So it's been about 18 years. And then in 1999, about 9 years ago, we founded a small hospital which has 50 beds, but it is fully equipped and we provide services to the rural population. This is important to mention that there are no other hospitals in the region in a radius of about 100 villages. So this hospital is the only support to something like 150,000 people. The hospital is not free, but it provides subsidized services to the rural population because we want it to be self-reliant and sustainable. But there are about 25% of the beneficiaries who get free services who are destitute and extremely poor. We have also set up a cadre of more than 500 health workers, 517 to be precise. These health workers are trained in basic health skills, and they run our outreach health network. Besides providing services in the hospital, we also go in the outreach areas. We have mobile medical vans for that, and we do a weekly medical camp in the underserved areas. And then we have the education component, in which we basically focus on women and children, but other groups as well. Health education is provided. Since it's an area in which malnutrition is rampant, we also do supplementary nutrition and immunization for women and children. We are partnering with Catholic Relief Services and Care under this program, and we cover pregnant women, lactating mothers, and children below the age group of 2 years under the nutrition and immunization activity. More than 60% of the birth deliveries take place in homes by unskilled persons in the Thar Desert. So we are trying to promote institutional deliveries and also initiation of early breastfeeding, which is also a problem. And then we have a health program focusing on adolescents. We started with girls. Now we are doing it for boys as well, in which we provide education on physiology and health problems that they might face when they go into the reproductive phase of their lives. And then we run some specialized health programs focusing on HIV/AIDS prevention. HIV/AIDS is a growing epidemic in India and also in the Thar Desert region. And we work with the National AIDS Control Organization of India on HIV/AIDS prevention through education and awareness generation. TB and malaria, of course, are two major diseases of the region. And we partner with the Global Fund Against AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria to provide TB and malaria control work. Other health problem which is very, very common in the Thar Desert is pneumoconiosis, because there is a large mining industry and the prevalence of silicosis is very, very high. So we are working on occupational lung health. I made presentations on occupational health and eye care in this conference earlier, and eye care is another specialized area of our work in which we are running a community-based eye care program through our hospital and through the network of our health workers. Training is an important part of our work because the community is unaware about the health issues. There is a lot of illiteracy. So we have designed different levels of training curriculums focusing on different levels of the community. Government is an important player in the country to provide health, and we try to link with the government as much as possible. The government of India is running a large program called National Rural Health Mission, which tries to combine all the healthcare activities for rural areas. And we are one of the community-based monitors for the government of India for National Rural Health Mission. And then it's important to generate some evidence for the evidence-based advocacy with the government and with the policymakers. So we do our researches on reproductive health, occupational health, and also geriatrics, which is an important area of our work because we have a large population of older people. And Gravis is an organization which works in other areas as well of life, such as water conservation, education, and capacity building. So we are trying to integrate our healthcare initiatives with overall development because it is very, very difficult to go to a rural community and provide health solutions and not provide other solutions. So we are looking into that integration. We recently organized a survey last year, and the findings of the survey were published in the form of a booklet called Community Health in the Thar Desert. We used household surveys and focus group discussions with the community, and some of the findings of the survey are outlined in the slide. We think that the health awareness level has raised in the population of about 1 million people that we are covering. The cadre of health workers, which is 517 now, is a good impact, a strong achievement. The health-seeking behavior has improved in the region. We found that it has been improved by 35%. 35% more people are going to healthcare centers as it used to be the case in the past. And we also found that there is a 20% reduction in mortality rates and 40% increase in the immunization coverage. Our study also found that nutritional status has improved among vulnerable groups, especially women, children, and older people above the age group of 60 years. The prevalence of diseases has reduced, and most importantly, the partnership with the government has been a significant impact, because in the earlier years, it was very difficult to work with the government, and there were more confrontations rather than collaborative partnerships, but now the government and we are working together for a better healthcare system. Just to give you an idea of the health spending, India spends less than 2% of its GDP on health. The government is trying very hard to raise the level to 2% of the GDP, but it's a very, very small amount that we spend on our health. It would be about $20 billion as compared to $2.3 trillion of the U.S., and the population difference is also four times, so the overall difference is about 400 times. Talking about future, we would like to continue our focus on capacity building and awareness generation. We are also in the process of setting up a training and resource center within the hospital, and we are also trying to link it up with the telemedicine facility, so that we can be in touch with the better hospitals in India and we can get their support for treatment and training. We also understand that one hospital is not going to be enough for the region. We need to have some more smaller facilities located in the remote areas. So we look forward to setting up satellite facilities. Of course, that will depend on financial resources. And then strengthening the cadre of village health workers is going to be another priority for us. And we are focusing on developing some specialized cadres of health workers focusing on occupational lung health, focusing on tuberculosis, focusing on HIV and AIDS, and reproductive health. And then networking and research focus will also continue. Government, as I have said a few times in this presentation, is going to be an important player for the country's health, and we would like to improve our ties with the government so that we can partner with them and they can partner with us. We are also at the very, very initial stages of thinking of a community-based health insurance plan. And I can't talk much about it because it's just being thought about, but there is a possibility that we will introduce it with our communities. And finally, we would like to integrate health with the overall developmental scenario, with the overall developmental process. We also receive a lot of volunteers coming from different countries to our hospital. So if any of you or if any friends of you would like to volunteer with us coming from the medical side or other sides of life, this is the page. This is the volunteer page from our website. The website URL is given on the next slide, but this is how people can contact us and they can come to work with us at our hospital. And this is our URL of our website. And before concluding the presentation, I would like to go to the WHO definition of health of 1950s, which says that health is a state of complete physical, social, and mental well-being, and not only the absence of diseases and symptoms. So in our program, we are trying to be as holistic as possible so that we can address the complex health issues of India. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank the speakers for four very interesting presentations. To me, I'm interested in this community-based. What does community-based mean to different people? So I've got a few questions myself, but I will leave those to the end. In deference to our visitor from overseas, I would like you to present any questions to Prakash Tyagi first. So has anyone got any questions for Prakash? Yeah, sure.
Most of the women do not get prenatal care because of limited health professionals that we have in the area. But definitely, besides promoting institutional deliveries, which definitely is a good alternative, we are also working on promoting skilled attendants, which are our health workers. And most of our health workers are trained birth attendants, and they obviously provide much better services than untrained birth attendants. But the focus has also been on institutional deliveries, because the rate of institutional deliveries is very, very low in India. There is a large program in the country called Mother Safety Scheme, which is providing incentives to women and to their families if they come to healthcare centers for birth deliveries. Healthcare centers are available in rural areas. They may not be able to provide hospitalization and tertiary level care, but birth delivery is a very simple thing, and which could be organized quite easily if it's not a complicated case at healthcare centers. So we are focusing on institutional deliveries promotion, but it's not the only thing that we are doing. We are also building the capacity of our health workers so that they can provide maternity services and also prenatal care to women in the area.
Pastoral, agro-pastoral, they might be nomads.
Majority of the population depends on agriculture, although it's a drought-prone area, but traditionally it has always been an area in which agriculture used to be the main source of livelihood. There are drought years and then there are normal years. In normal years, most people make enough earning or grow enough food on which they can survive. But then there are drought years in which we see temporary migration of male population to the nearby states where they can find employment opportunities in factories, industries, etc. Other than agriculture, animal husbandry is an important source of livelihood generation in the area. Most people keep some animals within their households, which could be cows or sheep or goats, through which they get products that could be sold in the markets. And then there is a large mining industry about which I talked in my presentation, and also there is a high prevalence of silicosis. But it is estimated that 2 million people work in the mines in that state. So it's a large industry. So those are some of the areas which provide basic livelihood to people. And we have been working in different areas of livelihood generation as well. We work on water conservation. We work on promoting agriculture in the arid conditions. So therefore, we are there in these activities, and we would just like to integrate our healthcare activities with these ongoing activities. In terms of malnutrition, I would say that more than 60% of women, of the region are anemic, and a large number of children are malnourished. But I don't really have exact figures to give you an idea about that. But malnutrition is extremely, extremely common. Thank you.
Okay. We may as well continue in reverse order. Our next, going back in reverse order, Shira was our next presenter, talking about the success of the health centre model. Has anyone got specific questions for Shira?
Just a comment regarding the presentation that Shira made. The first American community health centre Bayou, set up by Jack Geiger. We worked together in Mississippi at that time. And I recall one of the major problems in the African American community in Greenwood, Mississippi, just next to Mount Bayou, was diarrhea, childhood diarrhea. And one of the problems was sewerage. The streets were used as sewers, and there was wells, which were, we felt, and the community felt, was not clean. So what we did was a political job of trying to work out and this was Freedom Summer, the Civil Rights Summer in Mississippi, where things were very scary, okay? People were being killed and people out and so forth in different places. But what we did is work out with colleagues in the white community, physicians and so forth, to bring in water. And we helped to organize the community, and we found enough people. We didn't know about plumbing, but we found enough people to bring in to pipe water, and that's what did the trick for the diarrhea in children. One of the major causes of death in Nairobi and so forth is diarrhea. And the water in the slums of Nairobi or Harare and so on is frequently not clean, wells and so forth. So you've got to figure out how to get clean water, and sometimes you've got to pipe it in a long way, but that's number one, water. We're going to talk about it next year.
So anyone got specific questions for Shira, please? Shira?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's That's a great question. And a lot of our health centers right now are currently struggling with that, mainly because we have to show such clear indicators that we're not using any of our federal grant whatsoever on any of this international work. So clearly it's all outside resources. Basically, the way that ThunderMiss has been able to get all of their resources to develop their health center in Honduras was first partnering with Shoulder to Shoulder, which is their organization that they work closely with, that had already people on the ground and doing community assessments. Basically, they went in and applied the COPC model, which then allowed them to come in, and Shoulder to Shoulder was able to give them some resources to start building their community health center. It's called Shoulder to Shoulder. I'd never heard of it either. It's a really small organization. I'm not sure where it's based out of. Every health center is kind of using their own organization, so I'm not too familiar with all of them in detail. But it is an international organization that focuses on Honduras and is a nonprofit organization. They got a lot of funds also. They've gotten grant funding from the University of Cincinnati, just kind of finding little niches where they can go in. A lot of health centers have grant writers on site to provide, because a lot of them do other outreach services within their community locally. So to get funds for that, they already have grant writers working on that. And then also the community within where they are, the physicians are sometimes donating. They're not only the physicians, they're donating their time to go abroad to start these health centers, and they're donating their own money and resources as well. So that's been that's how they kind of got started when they first got there. And then once they were able to show results, they were able to get more grant funding after that. So the local community in itself, they've always done kind of fundraising activities. They have health fairs. They have a lot of them have school-based health, so they'll go to different schools, and they've been able to raise some funds based on that too. So they're still working on it. Any other questions? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment on Shira's historical reference to Sidney Clark. And I haven't heard his name mentioned for so long, but I remember how influential he was in going to South Africa with the health center concept and influencing so much of Africa in that process. But I may be wrong on this, but I also recall it was more health center based and not so much community based. And so the presentation that Tiagi made of the outreach to the households through local community health workers was such an important addition to that. And those two things came into Alma-Ata in very important ways, I'm not going to say. Just a comment.
That's great. Yeah.
One comment on that is I went back and read the report that the CARTS wrote fairly recently, and they do have an outreach component.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's
okay.
Faster than I had thought, because I have the same impression you did, that they did have a system of reaching out to the households and home visits. It's probably
there. And that gave you the correction.
Yeah. Emily and Sidney Clark really worked off of, from the information that I've read, obviously. I actually work closely with a fellow at GW who worked with them. His name is Jaime Goffin, and he worked with them to implement the same kind of model back in Israel. And they really started their work on the COPC model, which was basically the foundation now for the community health center model in the U.S. But it clearly has changed from what they started in South Africa and that we implemented in the United States. So. Thank you.
Now, for Nancy Bryant, any specific questions for Nancy?
Could you speak a little louder?
The
Say that last part again.
Were deworming tablets part of the intervention? And I was wondering if maybe there was some link between those particular participants not improving as much as they could have given the nutritional supplements.
Yeah. Well, let me start with the deworming. We have not been, I wouldn't say that we haven't gotten that, but there our project has been given some deworming medication from the health center, and so that is distributed, but it hasn't been done on a very routine basis, and the amount of staffs we have there, which is almost just sort of one person and then all these community health workers, that would take quite a bit more, because everybody would have to be followed up and which they are done, but then to see if they if the deworming medication could work on that. But that's one thing that we are hoping to initiate more, as you say. And then what were you asking about, Henry? In our original survey, some of the children were, it was said that they did have TB. And that's one of the things that reasons why we encourage the caregiver to take the child for treatment if they have a cough that's continuing, because that is a problem there because of the situation that they're living in. Most of these people are living in one-room homes that are either 8x8 or 10x10 with no electricity, no running water, and no sanitation. And so it's not a very clean environment. And that's another area that we're hoping to improve on, and that is the environmental. That's one of our next steps in the future, is to do the environmental work too. And I think we've only been doing prevalence. We are out there maybe twice a year for 1 or 2 months, and so we're handicapped by not being out there longer to carry out this work. But the funding on it has been extremely limited. And we first, since UN Habitat asked us to do this, there was no budget. So Jack got a Fulbright Award, and we used that to get started. Then we got a little bit of Rockefeller Foundation money in that. So we're trying to continue this, and so that's where we are. Were there any other questions about? No? Okay.
Now, for Martin Gittleman, any specific questions for Martin?
Yeah.
doses. So if you're seeing them more frequently and you like the pills, they don't stop taking the medication. The major reason for relapse is stopping the medication. But if you titrate, they feel more comfortable. That's the trick. Sir.
Yes. My question is related to the titration. Is you mentioned three providers in your presentation: the psychiatrist, the local medical doctor, and the barefoot doctor.
Right.
Who makes the decision that a drug is needed in a patient, and which dose will the patient begin? That's my first.
Okay. If you promise not to tell anybody outside the room, I'll tell you the answer.
Okay.
The answer is the barefoot doctor, the high school graduate, is adjusting the dose. You cannot go over 200 unless you check with a physician, and you certainly can't go over that 300 or whatever, even though the average recommended dose in the United States is 300 to 600. And I work in New York, and I'm telling you, it's 800 and 1,000, and people are like this. And check it out where you work and see what the average dose is. People are being over-medicated because of the system. You know, it's very tough to arrange to see the patient frequently unless you have primary care doctors. Incidentally, confidentially, I will tell you that in China, I was told 2 years ago that the training of the average psychiatrist in many parts of China, not Beijing and Shanghai, is equivalent to 2 years of an American college student in training.
Yes, thank you. WHO has estimated that by the year 2050, that mental illness, and particularly depression, would be the number one illness in the world. Now I'm wondering, in the context of China where you're working, how do you distinguish between the schizophrenia and this broader depression?
Right. It's a good point. That first of all, let me just point out that it is disturbing that we focus on HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria when there are other things that are killing people in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, and we should take a alma mater approach to health for all, not only people with three diseases. Incidentally, we need to focus on those three, but we need to also focus on others as well. Public health means health for all. And regarding your question, I would advise you to take a look at the primary health care manual that we wrote, differentiating the various illnesses. You know, depression is pretty easy to figure out, folks. It's not that difficult. People look depressed, they feel depressed, and you talk to the family, and you ask them. Okay, so the diagnosis is not as complex as one would make it. And schizophrenia, you know, two basic things. They have problems thinking, they have false beliefs. Okay, there are other problems that are caused, particularly in Africa, but also in, very often in India, of drinking brew. People make brew in various places, and they sweeten it frequently with ethylene glycol. And that drives people cuckoo. And in order to treat them, you frequently, well, what is being used in Africa is car batteries. Shock treatment, and it's applied, you know, to the ear and to the top of the head. And if you read the material, it
will quickly coming in.
Okay. And yeah. After 3 days, you're okay again. And what you try to do is make sure that ethylene glycol doesn't go in. But people don't buy regular wine and whiskey and so forth in many places. They make
Thanks very much, Martin. I think we're out of time now, so I'd like you all to put your hands together to thank our speakers for the excellent presentation.
Not only tourists, but I mean,